The Famous Monsters Podcast is brought to you by the Silver Scream Film and Comic Festival, happening March 4th, 5th, and 6th at the Roxy 14 Theater in Santa Rosa, California. For tickets and information, visit silverscreenfest.com.
The truth is out there. Welcome to the Famous Monsters Podcast, the official podcast of Forrest J. Ackerman's classic magazine that started it all back in 1958. Often imitated, never duplicated, we are more than just monsters. We cover sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and all kinds of genre pop culture, living up to Forrest's classic roots while staying current and ahead of the curve when we can. I'm David Weiner, editor of Famous Monsters, and with me today is Holly Interlandi, editor-in-chief of our American Gothic Press comics division.
Hello.
We have Caroline Stevenson, Famous Monsters media and promotions manager guru type.
Hello.
And, of course, producing the podcast, as always, is FM's Cameron Hathaway.
Is anyone else kind of just put off by that guy smoking in the corner staring at us?
Oh, my God. Is that the smoking man?
I think so. I mean, doesn't look that well manicured. So, yeah, let's go with Smoking
Doodly
Man.
Doodly doodly doodly. Called him Cancer Man. He was always Smoking Man to me.
Yeah. Well, whatever I say, whatever he says, don't trust him. The X-Files is coming back to TV, if you haven't figured that one out yet.
We
are big fans of The X-Files. It's been over a decade since Mulder and Scully have been on the small screen. They've been on the big screen twice in the interim while the show was going, and then after the show ended. In 2008. But they're coming back at the end of January, on January 24th, with a special six-episode miniseries on Fox. And today we're talking about the return of the series. We've got an interview with creator Chris Carter, and we're going to play a snippet of that. We're also going to be talking about our favorite episodes. Once again, the X-Files returns Sunday, January 24th, following the NFC Championship game. So you might have to endure a little football just to watch your X-Files return. And then
you say that like that's a bad thing or something.
It depends on
who you
are.
I will gladly endure football.
Woohoo, sports ball.
Yay.
Woohoo.
And then it's actually going to be a wonderful thing because it's two nights in a row. On the 25th, it's also going to continue on in its regular time period. It's only got six episodes, so you get the first two days in a row.
Hopefully, like, you know, it'll be well worth the wait, and, you know, you're getting just a nice little binge almost of episodes just going through that week. So, yeah, there you go. Cool.
I was lucky enough to see the first episode, actually a couple.
So jealous. What?
Stop bragging. No one likes a bragger.
Well, I saw it a couple months ago. It was a wonderful opportunity because since we are in the current issue of Famous Monsters, we have this wonderful interview with Chris Carter, the creator of The X-Files. They said, well, we need you to watch the first episode so you know what you're talking about. And I said, well, twist my arm. I guess I will watch.
Why were we not invited, David? That hurts my feelings.
Well, you had to huddle around my computer, and it had my name all over it.
No.
So, and I had like a limited window too. You know, it was going to self-destruct in 17
excuses.
Seconds.
I already hate like seeing David and then just to see his name for like an hour. So infuriating.
Me too. I had to look past the watermark of my own name to try and figure out what's going on.
Those watermarks on those viewing copies are so annoying.
Were you like flattered? They're like, oh, David Weiner. Look at that. Or then I was just like, all right, could we like move the watermark, please?
I felt very special. And then all thoughts of piracy immediately vanished when I knew that it would obviously come right back to me. No, I would never do that. It was very cool. It was very cool. I will tell you a little bit because I don't want to spoil anything.
I don't want to be spoiled.
But what's really cool about it is it takes what we know about all the tropes of the X-Files and it puts it all in right away. And it's a alien abduction episode.
Good.
But I'm not giving anything away in that, you know, we know right off the bat that aliens are involved. There's a Roswell flashback with a Roswell crash. The effects are amazing. This is also, I guess maybe it's spoiler territory if you don't know anything, but they've already released the first minute of the episode online. That being said,
online,
we can watch that now.
Where?
Everywhere when you type in X-Files first minute, I suppose.
Oh my gosh.
Google.
Pause.
All right, let's go ahead and pause right here. Go look at it really quick, and then we'll come back.
My name is Fox Mulder. Since my childhood, I've been obsessed by a controversial global phenomenon. Since my sister disappeared when I was 12 years old, and what I believe was an alien abduction. My obsession took me to the FBI, where I investigated paranormal science cases through the auspices of a unit known as the X-Files. Through this unit, I could continue my work on the alien phenomenon and the search for my missing sister. In 1993, the FBI sought to impugn my work, bringing in a scientist and medical doctor to debunk it, which only deepened my obsession for the better part of a decade, during which time that agent, Dana Scully, had her own faith tested. In 2002, in a change of direction and policy, the FBI closed the X-Files, and our investigation ceased. But my personal obsession did not.
All right, so that wasn't the
brief
Roswell thing that I
brief
promised.
Brief history of the X-Files.
But it does sort of recap everything there.
But that's good. I think that's awesome because now people can kind of jump in without going back. And even though I personally would suggest going back and watching all
highly recommend
fantastic television. I mean, it's great.
But if you can't, that's a nice little quick recap of.
I got the gist of it. All right, yeah.
All I could say is that I was abducted by aliens and my memory was wiped, which is why I thought the Roswell stuff was first. I forgot that the recap was there.
Yeah.
Good job, David. Okay. Well, I was starting to say. Wait, what's that chip in the back of my neck?
Oh.
Oh wait, I've got some black oil on my eye. Hang on.
He's a spy.
I just thought that his family wanted to, you know, get him tagged and chipped. That's all, so they know where he's at.
With the cattle.
Yeah.
So he can't get lost.
All right, we're missing him again. Let's go to the local.
Where's your brand?
Well, what's cool about the new miniseries, what I do know from this first episode is that it plays with your expectations. And so it's an alien abduction story, at least in this first episode. But things are immediately apparent, really, really quickly, that things are not what they appear to be. And what I was saying about the tropes of the X-Files is you think that it's going to go very, very similarly to
government cover-ups,
conspiracies, cover-ups, alien abductions, or not. And it turns out that things are much more twisted than you would expect them to be, and you're intrigued.
I like the sound of that.
Twisted.
Is it like the real world where you think you know, but you have no idea?
Yes, okay, on a daily basis.
I like that.
Cool.
And they're pleasant surprises and familiar faces. Mitch Pileggi is back as Skinner in that first episode. Other folks, which I will not talk about, and then Joel McHale, who is usually the soup in Community. He's a key player. He's got a very major role in this, in
the
first episode.
Oh, and I didn't realize he was even in it.
In this miniseries, yeah.
I knew he was a fan, so is it interesting seeing him play like the straight man, as it were?
Yeah, well, this is not a cameo. This is like a key pivotal character in, if not the entire series, at least the first episode or two.
I'm a big fan of X-Files. Can I get a key role in the miniseries?
All you have to do is ask when they come back, because I think they already shot this one.
Or be a rapper like Exhibit, and then you'll be in the second movie. So there you go.
Oh, there you go. Oh, well, we'll get to that second
God,
movie.
I forgot!
Yeah.
We will get to that
second
movie.
Sorry, I reminded
movie.
You, yeah.
But, he plays kind of like a conservative news anchor who focuses on strange phenomena and does not shy away from it in terms of his broadcasts. And he becomes embroiled in this abduction story, as it were, which involves and reunites Mulder and Scully after a decade being gone. And it's really cool because it's
it's a Mulder and Scully have to reunite again.
Well, you know, they get together,
they're
need
hot,
a little
they're
time
cold,
apart.
They're yes, they're no, they're in, they're out, they're up, they're down.
Which brings us to the second movie, right? Well, what's very cool, you know, what I'd like to do is I'd like to cut to our my conversation that I had with creator Chris Carter, because he kind of explains what the theory was to, you know, there's so many stories to tell. Boy, you get an opportunity to bring the X-Files back. What are you going to pick? You know, I mean, for everything that they decide this is what we're going to do, there's got to be 50 crumpled up pieces of paper on the floor of ideas that were probably pretty good too, but you got to focus on something, right?
Right, because they only have six episodes.
And also, like, technology's advanced since then. You know, the climate, both political and just, like, with the whole conspiracy theorists. Like, there's plenty to choose from.
Do we rattle the United States with conspiracies? Ah!
There's a lot of conspiracy we're talking about here. And he talks about the inspiration for this kickoff episode. And he also talks about what was very interesting to me. The opening credit sequence, I don't think is also going to be that much of a spoiler. It's one of those things where I expected, since the show's been gone for 10 years, you'd probably have an updated credit sequence. And it's exactly the same.
Good. I actually love that. I think it's awesome.
I'm so excited. I just read that in FM 283, which you can pick up on newsstands right now.
You did your homework this time. Good for you.
I'm so happy that they kept it, because for me that was always such a pivotal. I mean, I grew up with the X-Files, like literally, like my family would, you know, gather around the television on Friday nights at 8 o'clock, the primetime slot. And mm-hmm. We didn't actually watch a lot of television, but the X-Files was our exception. Like we were obsessed. And that opening sequence with the theme song and everything was just such a huge part of like the anticipation for the show, know. And so the fact that they kept it is just perfect. I love it.
I still get PTSD whenever I hear it. Like even as a grown ass man, and you're just like, okay, what's gonna happen? Something spooky's gonna happen. Like, like you just get in that mindset of like, okay, I'm prepared to get scared or for something intense to happen. Yeah.
Well, this is very much like a time capsule, so you could listen to what he has to say about that and his thought process behind not changing a thing. And I also ask him about conspiracy theories and what he writes, and does he subscribe to his own theories, or is it just writing something for a fun TV show? Let's give a listen.
The kickoff episode has really sort of an interesting and unexpected twist on the Roswell story and alien abductions and alien technology. What can you tease about that and how it plays out over the course of the miniseries?
Well, we took advantage of a well-established folklore and what is a mythology apart from the X-Files mythology, but certainly central to it, which is the idea that in the late 1940s there were a series of crashes that are believed to have been UFOs, some of which may have been recovered, and we make that a part of our modern storytelling or our contemporary storytelling by connecting the two in an interesting way.
And the theories that you put together combined with the modern day context of sort of a citizen for nation are extremely compelling. You know, you have a convincing argument, at least within the context of the show. Is this simply fabrication for entertainment and meant to be thought provoking, or how much of this conspiracy theory do you actually subscribe to in reality?
I subscribe to what I would call a sort of general idea that there is something like a new world order developing, and to what extent or what great or lesser extent, I have no idea.
And if you did, you couldn't tell us anyway.
Right.
Would you consider this new miniseries accessible to casual fans and to new recruits for the show? Or do you feel you need to really be caught up on the details and conspiracy theories of the show? Or do you think it strikes a balance?
I think it strikes a balance, and we do a quick catch-up at the very beginning of the episode, as you saw, that I think really lays out what the show is, where it's the ground that it has covered in its long run, and where we might find it now. So that was by design, because we do want to attract new viewers whenever and wherever possible.
Mm-hmm. And one of the touches that I really enjoyed and just thought about, while it's not necessarily a big thing, there was clearly some thought behind it, and that's just the opening credit sequence and how that has not changed, and I thought it might. What's your thought process behind that?
Yeah. Well, I really love that opening sequence, and to monkey with it would have been easy and maybe expected. And as you're saying, it's kind of unexpected that we don't mess with what I think is a signature element of the show.
I think it also, if I can project, at least for me, it symbolizes that while time has gone by, it's still the X-Files you know and love. Nothing's changed. We're just starting new episodes and a new connective story.
I think that's a really good way to look at it. I think the idea here was, you know, people are calling it a 10th season. It is certainly a portion of or incremental to what we did through 9 seasons of the show. But that said, I think it flows right out of what was done before.
How is, so when you finally actually got everything together and you're sitting there on the set the first day, were you surprised? Were you, had you expected this day to come at a certain point? And how was the chemistry? Did it feel like the old, good, feel, you know, seems like old times? Or had things changed?
It did seem like old times. I have to tell you that our first day of work together, there was so much work to do that nobody had time to sort of like, you know, even, you know, acknowledge that this was the a new beginning, because we had to dive so quickly back in. You know, I think that everyone, that said, I think that everyone acknowledged that this was momentous for us. There was a nice, I would call it, atmosphere and a creative and productive atmosphere, certainly acknowledged by all of us.
So Mulder and Scully, you're going to be coming back at the end of this month.
Yes.
And what do you guys think? What do you expect? What are you hoping for? What do you think they're going to be doing in terms of staying relevant, given the 90s are no longer happening and we're now in a different age? We're in a citizen four world, as Chris Carter and I like to put it.
I think Mulder moves to Portland. He grows a man bun.
Hipster Mulder.
Yeah, it's hipster Mulder.
Yes!
But at the same time, he's actually deep undercover trying to do, you know, some research on a case, because he thinks his sister might have been just like picked up by a group of hippies rather than abducted by aliens. Like the drugs are hitting in, and like all these mind altering medications are really helping him find the truth out
on
there.
A serious note for a second, I actually hope that I think it's possible. I think actually things have shown us recently, like Star Wars has shown us recently, that it's possible to both adapt to a new story and give little winks to the old ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that X-Files finds that balance that I thought Star Wars did so well.
You know, it's funny, because they're doing all sorts of promotion for the show, they did a guest stint on Jimmy Kimmel, and Caroline and
so
I
great.
Were just watching this video. It's really funny. They Jimmy Kimmel does a little skit with Duchovny and Anderson, where they're doing a brand new case, but they're still stuck in the 90s.
She pulls out the brick phone. She tries to make a call, pulls out the brick phone, and the antenna's like up to the ceiling.
And they've got they're like, let's do a little research. Let's get on the internets. And then they have to connect with AOL via a modem that is from early 90s, clearly.
Oh, that's amazing. I love it. Dial up.
And then there's a little hot and heavy moment, too, which is pretty amusing.
Yes, I've wanted forever.
Yes.
But not in real. I will specify. I never wanted that in the show, but I enjoy the fan service. I really appreciate it. And the second movie doesn't really count, because they never should have gotten together, and I don't believe that actually happened. But,
yeah.
So
general,
it's not, the second movie isn't canon for you, is what you're saying.
No, I agree. I didn't actually see the second movie, but I agree. I think they were catering a little bit too much towards the fan service angle by the end.
Any show, whether it's Moonlighting or X-Files or anything in between, you know, Moonlighting being now a completely dated reference, it's all about if they don't hook up but they want to hook up and you want them to hook up, there's so much more palpable sexual chemistry than when they actually do hook up. Because once they hook up, then, you know, it's awkward the next day. You know, they feel like, well, do we just treat each other with the chemistry we had before, or now do we have to behave differently?
What if, like, Mulder, like, just, like, his entire goal was just, like, to sleep with Scully, and then he just, like, immediately, like, leaves her the next day? Like, he just, like, quits the FBI, like, goes off the grid. He's just like, listen, I just wanted to hit and quit at this entire time. And now that I finally have, you know, later, I'm off to Californication.
I actually really admired the fact that they held off for that long, like, through the entire run of the TV show. It's such a heteronormative thing to do, like, oh look, it's a guy and a girl, they're gonna sleep together, and the fact that they managed to make it compelling without doing that was really great.
Thank you, writers.
Exactly. I mean, there were several times throughout the series, and I think at least the first movie, where there was a moment where they were about to kiss and then, you know, she gets stung
the
by a bee.
She gets stung by a bee that moment,
you know,
in the first movie.
Or it would be a dream sequence, and you're like, oh my God, wait, what did I miss? They're totally making out. And then it turns out to be like
a
alternate universe
and
a dream sequence or something like that.
Yes.
And I think we all remember that amazing Rolling Stone cover that was Wish Fulfillment.
Oh, yes.
Where they're just, it's Mulder and Scully in bed. And you're like, yeah, that's, gosh, that's on the newsstand. That's amazing.
Want it, but don't.
Yeah, that was back when Rolling Stone was still good. Yeah, we were subscribing to
So back in the 90s?
Back in the 90s.
Because of that role. Wasn't, like, Duchovny also, like, Sexiest Man of the Year or something like that because of, like, that role on television as well?
He
like
should
people
be Sexiest Man of the Year.
Every year. Well, the great thing is, like, it doesn't look like he ages, like, whatsoever. So he's
they
a vampire.
Haven't.
So that's an X-Files.
Gillian Anderson gets hotter as she gets older.
Oh, yeah.
So
absolutely.
Basically, last night, I watched a couple episodes from season 7. Then I watched the movie from 2008. Mm. Then this morning, I watched the trailer for 2016. They look exactly the same. Like,
hotter.
Not just...
Hotter.
Just...
They're like
they had baby fat and puppy dog faces in, like, the first couple seasons.
Yeah.
And now it's like they matured, they grew up, and they were...
Level up!
The hotness factor increased tenfold.
Absolutely.
They find the Fountain of Youth in one episode, but they didn't tell anyone that they found the Fountain of Youth.
They actually found it.
Yeah.
So when you guys are watching The X-Files in general, do you guys like the show beginning to end? Or do you have, like, for me specifically, while I love the connective tissue of all the episodes that had a very long sort of dramatic storyline with aliens, abductions, pregnancy, conspiracy theories, I personally was a big fan of the Monster of the Week type of episodes.
I completely agree.
Because especially when the show was first on, I wanted to watch it as much as I could, but there were times when I actually had a social life or another obligation.
What?
A
social life?
David,
don't
lie.
Well, I did have that girlfriend from Canada.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And she'd visit once every...
We all have a girlfriend from
Never.
Yeah. Well, that internet took so long to connect.
You're making Pamela Anderson jealous, David.
So if I got pretty upset with The X-Files because there were times when I'd miss episodes and I'd come back, and if it was that storyline that I just missed a couple episodes, I'd be lost. And I was like, you know what? I'd like being able to sit down, watch it. It's a complete self-contained story. I'm in, I'm out, I'm happy, and then that's that. I don't know. Do you guys feel the same way?
I was watching it more back in the early seasons, and it sort of tapered off in the later seasons. But I actually thought that it did a really good job, especially in the first couple of seasons, of balancing that greater story arc with the Monster of the Week episodes. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of shows that do that now, but I thought X-Files was a very early great example of it. Like, it's like, oh, are they going to go to the alien route this week, or are we just going to get leeches and ears?
Yeah, exactly.
Some creature. creature.
I'm a fan of leeches and ears. I don't know.
That first episode, that episode that was health. Totally like a total tribute to The Thing with where they changed personalities and the worms. And the, does anybody else remember this one called Ice?
Yeah, well, that was, you know, we were going to break down our favorites. That's among my favorite, but I think you should talk about it because I think that's a favorite of many, many folks in the first season.
Well, I don't remember everything about it because obviously it aired in like 94 or something. I was like 13 years old.
It was the first season. It was the eighth episode.
93,
I
was 12. Okay.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I was a baby.
Okay. Caroline, shut up.
Caroline's first words were Jar Jar, Jar Jar.
You know, they might have been. Yeah. They might
now that
have
I think about
been.
It.
But yeah, Ice was great because I've always been a big fan of The Thing and John Carpenter's The Thing, and they used. What is it? Who Goes There? Is that the story? Yeah, Who Goes There? The John Campbell novella that was the source for the John Carpenter's The Thing and the original thing.
Yeah.
Basically, isolated folks. They have no access to the outside world, and they chose that story for budget concerns because they're already like having budget issues, and they wanted to keep things contained. So they're like, well, you know what? Let's pick an Alaskan drilling station, isolated, a solo location, and then we'll sort of thingify it.
Yeah.
We'll do our thing on it.
Yeah, we'll do our thing about it.
Well, what was so great about the episode, if I recall, was obviously I was 12 or 13 when I was watching it, and so I wasn't all that familiar with The Thing in general, like either the original or John Carpenter's remake, and yet I still found it incredible. I still found the episode incredibly scary and compelling. And now I sort of look back and go, oh, they were doing The Thing. But the fact that they were able to, like, make it a great episode, even if you didn't know what The Thing was, at least for me as a 13-year-old kid.
That one.
Nice homage, but not exactly a rip-off or a copy.
Exactly, yeah. And I can see the budget thing, too, because the monster of the week, as it were, the worm thing, just changed people's personalities. It didn't actually change them physically, so they were able to...
No latex required for
exactly,
that one.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, what's interesting about that particular episode is that and his name escapes me right now, maybe I can find it later, but the production designer who worked on The Thing had just started working on The X-Files, and so the reason why the set looks straight out of The Thing is because it's the same production designer as John Carpenter's The Thing.
Oh, I thought you were going to say they used the same production designer.
No, the guy's just a one-trick pony, apparently. When it comes to
they used the same thing, but then they said it was too expensive to rent, so they put it back in the warehouse. You know, one of the things also about these, whether it was the Monster of the Week episode or it was just any other type of episode, what was wonderful for me about The X-Files, and I think makes it so watchable for everybody, is the production value is extremely high. Simply by the fact that they were shooting in Vancouver and in Canada, they got a lot of mileage out of those locations. So you didn't feel like you were like, you know, Chips or Starsky and Hutch, you know, shooting in the canyons of Southern California because that's all they could go find for locations. Here, they have a variety of locations, a variety of elements. It's always cold. There's always some woods. There's always some snow. There's always some, when they talk, you could see their breath hanging in the air. Mm-hmm. And it really created a wonderful, haunting atmosphere for the X-Files.
It is like right outside your own door. Like it could be happening. Like these aliens are investigating. Anyway. Oh, by the way, right outside. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What are some of your favorite episodes of the show?
Well, I was talking to George about this morning. Like we both grew up watching it, and so like we had a fun time watching it. But when it comes to specific episodes, you got to really kind of go back and remember it because I haven't really watched it since then. But I probably will watch a couple of Choice episodes leading up to it just to get back into the whole mindset. But I do remember one that really freaked me out when I was younger was the episode Detour. It was the fourth episode in the fifth season where Mully and Scholder, they're off to like...
Mully and Scholder! I love it!
That's awesome!
Sorry, we're calling you on that. But, you know, you don't even realize you would have said that if we didn't say a thing. So keep on going.
Mulder and Scully, they're off to
Is
a
that
retreat.
Like Brangelina?
They're off to a retreat. By the way, I'm editing all this out because I have that power.
Whoa. Why did we make him the producer?
They're off to this seminar to do... but bottom line, it's off near the woods, but they get on a detour because there's a investigation going on. There's a killing in the woods.
Because, of course.
And Mulder's like, well, we got to check this out because I don't want to go to this stupid seminar. And apparently there are, like, invisible people with glowing red eyes that are killing people left and right in the woods. And you later find out that it's, like, the theory is that they're, like, conquistadors from, like, back when the Spaniards first, like, invaded North America, well, South America, and they, like, adapted over time to have their body camouflaged to what they were, like, up against in the woods.
Very
but
cool.
I remember it was so creepy because it was one of those episodes where you don't see the monster till the very end, but just the idea of it's still around somewhere. It's something you're trying to fight that you can't see. It was really creepy, and I remember, like, the glowing red eyes still.
I'm sure. And wow.
Because after, like, the very last shot is, like, they're about to check into a hotel room. Because they killed one of them. They're looking for the other one. They never found it. But then, like, Mulder's like, we shouldn't stay here. And then they, like, leave the room. It pans down to underneath the bed, and then you see the glowing red eyes. Like,
Oh my God! I just got chills. I think I just peed my pants a little.
It's an amazing episode.
Well,
so, yeah,
I think anything that had to do with under the bed with the X-Files was extremely scary.
Oh yeah.
Like, of course.
Oh, can we mention that other under the bed episode?
Yeah, exactly. You know what? We didn't even have to talk about that because if for the uninitiated, if you've never seen that, you need to see Home. If you're going to see any episode, what's amazing about that episode is that they never re-aired it again.
No, so, because
one of the most disturbing things I've ever seen. Yeah.
We won't. Let's not even say anymore. If you're not familiar with this episode, you got to seek out Home. You can get it on the box set that's out now. Any of those, but it is definitely disturbing. Netflix.
Is that how it's pronounced? Netflix. Or did you just get abducted? Netflix. No one knows that I have been a pod person this entire time.
We're podcasters.
Podcaster. Pod people.
We sound like the Coneheads. We need to scale this back. All right, I have to say that one of the cool things that I love about X-Files also.
X-Files.
You know what?
No one can say
folks,
a word.
None of us are drunk, and we should be based on the way
that eggnog, George. Yeah.
It's funny. Every podcast, we eventually say, "Are you drunk?" I think we're just overworked and overexcited.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I love about the X-Files, especially the Monster of the Week episodes, is that it's never entirely predictable. You know, in your mind, you sort of enter these episodes thinking, well, clearly there's a monster. So what is it, and how does it manifest itself? But there are times when the X-Files, because the whole dynamic of the X-Files, which makes it such a venerable show, is that Mulder is the skeptical believer. You know, he wants to believe, but he still remains slightly skeptical, but not as skeptical as Scully, who needs the scientific evidence and the scientific explanation or the psychological explanation. And there are wonderful episodes where up until the very end, you don't even know. And it really leads you to believe, to thinking, oh, well, definitely we've got a monster or a creature or some phenomena here that cannot be explained.
But it also wasn't always a monster,
well, that's
which is
what
made it so successful.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. You know, sometimes the psychology of the situation would win out. I mean, even with the conquistadors, it's like, well, there's a rational explanation here, even though it's very sort of otherworldly. It's like, well, adaptation, evolution, and camouflage makes for a much more logical explanation than it just comes from another planet.
Yeah.
Although I loved at the very end, usually with these episodes, they'd end with a bit of a question mark. So it wasn't a definitive one way or another.
Yeah. Always a question mark. That was one of the biggest, I think, the trademarks of the X-Files, was that you never knew if it was actually supernatural or just, you know, just sort of a bunch of coincidences.
Mm-hmm. So
I watched an interesting set of episodes last night. So when the X-Files were coming out, I was a youngling. But what I really
just stop there.
What the X-Files meant to me was, it would be late nights up with my mom, and we would watch a bunch of episodes, and they'd be scary and creepy and like, ooh.
I have to ask, how old were you if you were watching
this? I was
this?
Born in 1990.
Oh, right, God!
So, well, what I'm saying is that you were young.
Early elementary school.
This is some scary stuff for a youngling.
I know.
Yeah, I was 12, and I was scared.
I didn't. What's weird was, like, I didn't like scary stuff. Like, scary movies really, really scared me. But, like, watching the X-Files, like, it was okay. Like, somehow, like, it was really scary, but it still seemed like it was okay.
Well, it's because you had your comforter that you could hide behind.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And...
Yeah, and your mom was your comforter,
and
too.
And my crush on David Duchovny.
Ah.
You
Swoon.
Know.
When you were five?
Yes.
Jar Jar, move even over.
But so I was trying to think back, you know, when we were talking about first doing this podcast, you know, it was hard for me. I was like, did I have a favorite episode? But I couldn't think of one that was my specific favorite, but I thought of something that has always stuck out in my mind, even years now. And it was, there was a particular episode where basically a young child is abducted. There are eerie circumstances, and you come to find out that she was sort of saved. She was originally going to be kidnapped by a child killer, and these walk-ins, these ethereal old soul beings came in and saved her before this fate. So essentially she is dead, but she did not suffer the fate. But she does, in the episode, appear to her mother, and all she's saying is the number 74. And like, it's like, what is that? What does that even mean? And later you see Skinner and Mulder and Scully, and they're, you know, sort of leaving the case alone. They're going back to the airport to fly home. And all of a sudden Scully gets this idea, and she looks at the map, and there's California Route 74 that leads. And there was something on the note. I'm not explaining this very cohesively. I'm sorry.
Go on.
Before the child was taken, the mother writes sort of a mysterious note, and it's basically before the walk-ins take a child, they give you a vision of what your child's fate would be, their death, essentially. So the mother, you know, writes this kidnap note, and it says, it mentions Santa Claus. So as Mulder, Skinner, and Scully are driving away, and Scully looks at this map, and she sees, oh, up Route 74 is Santa's village, Santa's North Pole village.
Yeah.
And then she gets this, oh, we have to go. Like, I'm putting two and two together. I'm trusting this ghost thing. But then they find, like, Santa's village, the guy who runs it is this child killer. And they chase him into the woods, and it just pans up, and they're just, like, mass graves. And I just remembered that and just being like, okay.
Oh, man.
That made a serious impact on you.
Was... insane.
Do you remember what that was called? Which episode
that was? That was Sein und Zeit.
Sein und Zeit.
Yes. But, so that's what stuck out most in my mind from all these years, of course, because why wouldn't it? That's, you know, creepy as all heck. But I also watched, it's technically a two-part episode because they want to keep talking about these walk-ins. And Mulder gets this idea, or, you know, people are telling him, all of a sudden a psychic appears. And they realize, like, his sister was taken.
Oh, they tied in the whole mythology of his
of
abducted
the sister.
Okay.
And I don't want to give it too much of that away, because that is a pretty long-standing theme throughout the show. But the end of that, the second episode is called Closure, and it actually ends with closure. Like, they're... is no question mark after that episode, which I thought was pretty...
That's unusual.
Interesting for an X-Files episode.
Well, it seems like, if I could just jump in, the whole concept, we don't even have to necessarily follow the storyline, but Mulder's sister and her abduction, they're bringing it back, clearly, because they're planting it in the recap of the new miniseries. So if they're mentioning it, it's going to play into this new storyline of this new six episode arc. So that's going to be interesting how they do that and how they fold that in. For me, one of the great things about the X-Files also is, for as much as it took itself seriously or creeped or flat out scared you, there was lots of senses, moments of humor, and some episodes had a complete sense of humor. I mean, anything involving the Lone Gunman, I loved.
Yeah.
I even watched the spin-off series of the Lone Gunman. I was really bummed that it didn't last as long as it did, because I thought they were wonderful. I have to say, my favorite, when I thought back, well, what are my favorite episodes? Because there are so many to choose from. I really basically went on what popped into my mind, and three things popped into my mind. Ice was one of the first things that popped in my mind. I really loved that, because I remember also thinking to myself, you know, having seen The Thing before that and being a fan of The Thing, my first thought was, oh, what a ripoff of The Thing. But then I just immediately got caught up in the storyline. I said, this is a great play on expectations, and it's very much got the feel of The Thing, but it's not that.
It's more of a tribute than a ripoff.
Absolutely. It's very much an homage. But my favorite episode, and of the three things, the movie, the first film, which we can get to, I loved. I thought it was great through and through. Especially because it like delivered. There was no question mark. They're like, there are aliens. There's aliens from the get go. It's more like integrating some of the conspiracy theories and how they sort of fit together in the whole puzzle. But we can get to the movie in a minute. But my point is that in the episodes that had a little bit more comedy, my favorite episode, hands down, was Dreamland. And that's the one,
what season was that?
Sixth season.
I may have not been watching.
It was a two-parter, and it was basically, it was when X-Files was getting very caught up in a timeline and a storyline that, wasn't interrupted very often. And they kind of, they took a little detour, and Michael McKean, the comedian who,
I know him, yeah.
He plays one of the men in black at Area 51, and through alien circumstances, it's basically like a body switch movie, and he switches bodies with Mulder, so Mulder is now this men in black who's kind of a quirky, fastidious type of character, and they switch bodies, and so he is now partnered with Scully, and Scully has no idea that Mulder has changed because the body's the same, but she's starting to notice. Over the course of two episodes, something ain't right. And, of course, Mulder's now in this body of this other person. He's got to figure out what's going on as well. And, you know, there's this great moment where they are looking at each other. I'm going to get it backwards. Mulder, who is now Michael McKean in his body, is looking at himself in the mirror, and he's seeing his own reflection as Michael McKean. And it's a brilliant moment because you see how it's completely two different people. But they had to choreograph this motion where they're constantly trying to fake each other out in the mirror and figure out what's going on. They end up doing a little bit of a strange dance, too. And it's such a great sequence, and it's such a great episode.
That sounds awesome. I don't remember that one.
Seek that one out. It's called Dreamland. Dreamland is also what they a lot of people call Area 51.
Oh, okay. So that's the reference.
Oh.
So are you guys more episodes? You guys fans of the movies? Did we do your episode, Holly?
No, we didn't.
Because you talked about Ice, but not really.
Well, that's one of the episodes I remember, but it's not the episode I was going to talk about. The episode I was going to talk about was we were referring a little bit to humor, and although it wasn't funny when it aired, it sort of became a family joke. The episode "The Host" with the infamous Fluke Man,
yes,
which I think everyone when you think about the X-Files, what flashes into your head? The Fluke Man is one of the first things, and because it's so disgusting, it's just body horror, like flat out, and so it became like this familial joke. Like, you know, he lived in the sewers and stuff, and so after we watched that episode, like, my family was always joking about how, you know, we'd be sitting on the toilet and the Fluke Man would come up and bite you in the ass or whatever. They're like, oh, beware of the Fluke Man, you know. And so, and it was such a great, and that episode didn't take itself too seriously. It was just gross and funny and weird. And I really appreciated that they could do that amongst all the other intelligent stuff. They just flat out threw out this disgusting Fluke monster, and it just became a thing with my family. So with a whole bunch of people, it seems.
I always wonder, you know, that writer's room for that show had to have been amazing because are such twisted, strange, and just odd stories out there. And
like, what did you have a nightmare about last night?
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Or you see a sideshow carny with a tattoo of a jigsaw puzzle on his head, and you say, you know what, this guy, we gotta build something around him. And they would do a lot of that. You know, or it's just like, you know, I'm sure they had a very weathered copy of Ripley's Believe It or Not. You know? Yes. And they said, all right, what haven't we hit on yet?
Two-headed crocodile,
because
let's make it three.
Because that was one of the best parts about it, was it didn't matter what your cup of tea was when it came to, like, you know, the unexplained or whatnot. You could be into cryptozoology, you could be into alien abductions. They had something right up your alley there. And it was always fun to come back and see, like, yeah, in certain cases, what's the monster of the week, or what's the overarching story that's really going to tie everything together by the season finale.
And I don't know. I lost my train of thought completely.
Movies.
Movies.
Let's talk about the movies.
I loved the first film as well. I thought it was great. It catered to all of my wishes and expectations as an X-Files fan.
What I loved about the movie it was very timely as well, because the show was extremely hot when it came out, and they kind of didn't need to do a movie, but everyone sort of says, well, where's the big X-Files movie? So what they did was they wisely made it kind of a standalone piece, but it did tie in, so you could sort of accommodate newbies to the show and the series, as well as diehard fans of the show. And what I always remember from that was it was amazing just to see an episode that had a really good budget, a solid budget, and so amazing effects. And this kind of ties into the second movie to a certain extent, which a lot fewer people seem to have seen. But the movie for the first one, it was coming off the heels of the Oklahoma bombing. Mm-hmm. And so they had the bombing of a federal building as well. And what I really enjoyed about that is that you had Mulder and Scully, and you had a scenario that was not – it was just them as the FBI dealing with domestic terrorism. And it all kind of plays in to larger themes and conspiracies later on. But I really enjoyed seeing them for once just being two friendly FBI agents with a wonderful repartee and relationship. And they always knew – they were kind of one step ahead. They kind of knew something. And I loved seeing – that scene where Mulder's trying to get that soda, and next thing he knows, he's standing in front of a bomb. And
yeah.
He's like, everyone get out, but of course he can't leave, and he's going to save the day, but how's he going to do it?
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed that film, and like I said before, they have the aliens from the get-go in that film. And
the black goo.
The black goo. And all that stuff like that, and it all plays really well, but I think because that film was so wonderful, I think the second feature film was a disappointment in a lot of people's minds.
Oh, yeah.
Because they tried to make it kind of a standalone Monster of the Week movie, which I commend, but it turns out there are no real monsters in the movie. Right. What happened?
Humans. Humanity. We're monsters.
Those monsters aren't as scary to me when you're just doing head transplants.
Yeah. When I saw it.
But Billy Connolly is good. He's always entertaining.
When I saw the second movie, it was, I didn't go see it in theaters. It was kind of, and it had been years since I had seen The X-Files, but I remember watching it, and I was like, oh, you know, cool. Like, I feel like I just watched an episode of X-Files. Like, that's neat and stuff. But then,
about that.
Neat. So when I watched it again last night after I had watched my two episodes from season 7, and like, I started, because I had just watched episodes from this, like, core seasons, like, I could start picking out all the disappointments in the film. Mm. Like, it was just, like, how is Dana Scully still so skeptical after 9 seasons and a movie jam-packed with aliens? I was like, and that was incredibly
disappointing. That really was my first thought too. I'm just
like,
wait,
like,
wasn't she like, she remembers a flying saucer?
There's no arc. Like, she's still back at like square one. And I was like, that was really disappointing for me to see like no change in her character whatsoever. I think that if that film had been, if you could take that film and transplant it, boop,
like the heads in the movie.
Yeah, like the heads, just boop. Stick it on top of season 2.
As like a two-parter or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that would have made so much more sense. Because like I said, when I first watched it, it seemed like just a regular
Monster of the Week
standalone. And also because there is a moment, too, where she like brings up Mulder's sister again. Mm. And I was like, I just watched the episode called Closure. and even if like I know, because that was still season 7 and there were 2-3 more seasons and a movie, and so of course more stuff could have come up, but I was like, that just didn't feel right. Like, this is 2008,
yeah,
and you're still
forgot.
Like, ah, you're still chasing after your sister. So, ah. I was like, no.
Did you guys stay to the bitter end when Mulder and Scully kind of, you know, slowly but surely just were appearing less and less? And what they had Robert Patrick playing Doggett, and they had Annabeth Gish playing Monica Reyes. Were they? Were you guys watching any of that at all? Did you guys try
no.
and stick with it?
No, yeah, I was out of it by then.
Yeah, I tried to stick with it because I was actually very curious how that transition was going to go, and I thought they did an admirable job, and I thought the shows were still well written, but it just wasn't the same. It was clearly like they had to kind of put the horse down, and yeah. they didn't want to do it.
Terrible.
The only thing I appreciated from the second film was the whole with the whole transplant, the head transplant. Like, that's actually been done in history, so that's the creepy part, because it's real and it existed. Like, German scientists back during World War II tried putting the head of a monkey onto another monkey and try to get it to like move around and stuff like that. But the monkey, while it was successful, it was paralyzed from the neck down. It couldn't move, and apparently, like, it gave him this deathly stare. Like, it knew it wasn't in its body.
Oh,
and like,
that's
apparently
creepy.
Like, they how they like describe the monkey looking at them, just like, what have you done to me? But that's not the most messed up part.
Yeah, that's pre animal testing ethics right there.
PETA would have burned down this lab. Yeah, no, but a Russian scientist by the name of Vladimir Demikhov, I first read this story in this wonderful book called Elephants on Acid.
Oh my god, did you do homework?
A little bit, yeah. Because I remember when we were going to be talking about the second movie, I was like, well, that's the one thing that I did appreciate about it. It was they were taking things from history that had happened, like actual testing and like surgeries on stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But this one doctor, Dr. Demikhov, he was a Russian scientist. He put one dog's head on another dog. Because when we do see the multiple-headed dog in the second one, that's kind of a reference to that. And this actually happened. It was successful for a couple of days, but eventually the dog died because the second head didn't have its own digestive system. It could like eat water or milk, but it would just spit it back out. It's just crazy stuff. If you want to read more, Elephants on Acid
that's
is a
horrifying.
Great book. Yeah, but it really did kind of hit home for me when watching that movie. Like, you know, we are almost on the brink of doing like a human head surgery or whatnot. We're like, you know, maybe a couple of years away.
Yeah, they're doing limbs. They're doing faces.
So, like, it's not that out of left field.
Creepy science.
But still very creepy science. Yeah.
I am actually one of the only living brain donors that still seems to be running a magazine right now.
Was your brain from Abby Normal by any chance?
Yes, okay. Yes, that's why I gave it away. Well, what do you guys think? Is this going to do really well? Do you think this might be a harbinger of more X-Files, or do you think
depends on
do you think the audience is kind of gone by the wayside?
No, I think it totally depends on whether or not it just runs on nostalgia or if it has a life of its own. And if it just runs on nostalgia, then I don't think they're going to do it anymore because it has to have some new spark, or else they're not going to get any new watchers. And if you get new watchers, then all the old ones are going to get bored, and you know, it's just.
It's very smart that they're doing a miniseries rather than just
a
season of something. Because then with the miniseries, like, look at all the miniseries on TV right now. Like Fargo, we didn't know that was going to be such a successful first season. So, like, hey, you know, let's do a second little miniseries there, don't you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, it's really good.
Well, the reason that this exists, Chris Carter, when I was talking to him, he explained that it's a trend now. It's a trend to take 90s series and series from the past and reboot them or bring them back. You know, they're doing it with Twin Peaks. They're doing it with, what, Full House?
Fuller,
is coming
Fuller
back.
House.
Fuller House. Yeah.
That's a mistake. That's
not a fan of Full House.
Save it for our podcast on Full House.
Okay. Tune in next week.
And then after that, we'll do Small Wonder after that one. But, you know, it's a trend. It's a trend. And that's the reason kind of that they were able to bring this back. And, in fact, they actually wanted to do 8 episodes based on locations and actor availability, you know, with Duchovny and Anderson. They said, let's just do 6. But I think it's going to be great. I think 6 is actually really good. I mean, you can kind of associate it with True Detective. You know,
yeah.
You can sort of get in, get out, tell a isolated tale. If the shorter it is, the more intense it can be, because you could really tell a good, solid story without a lot of extra fat. So that's what I'm hoping that this is going to be. And I really do hope that this is going to do so well that we can do another 6, you know, maybe in another year or two.
And you know what? Worst comes worst, if it doesn't happen, it's already just left us with this fantastic legacy of what this show inspired. Like, Buffy was inspired by the show. Fringe wouldn't have been Fringe without that show. And that's why I love Fringe so much, was it had that, like, kind of updated X-Files feel where you had the Monster of the Week, but you had the overarching story as well.
Even
so,
shows like Supernatural wouldn't exist without the X-Files.
Without the X-Files. So, like, for them to come back, I think, yeah, people will still gravitate towards that because we've been watching all this other stuff inspired by it. So why not go directly to the source, the pure stuff, and baby powder mixed in.
You also have to go that, you know, while we're talking about it being the source, you have to go to the foundation of the X-Files, and you have to think about everything from the Twilight Zone.
I was going to mention
Kolchak, the Night Stalker.
Oh, yeah. Hitchcock.
And, Alfred Hitchcock Presents. Mm-hmm. The X-Files is not wholly original. It's an homage to many things that came before it as well. And like many stories that came before it, you know, there's only so many stories out there. You got to repackage them and play with expectations.
Right,
and
right.
So
mm-hmm.
X-Files is a wonderful and very original show, but it owes a lot to its own television history as well. And so you guys in the audience should definitely seek out some of these stores. See?
There
I have a lifespan where I lose my ability to manage my tongue at the end of a podcast.
Yeah, now we know it's been, what, like 45 minutes? That's how we tell time.
TikTok.
Let's plug. So the new issue of Famous Monsters, which is the current issue of Famous Monsters, is out now with our interview with Chris Carter. And you can go to Famous Monsters. What else? Where can you go, Caroline, to get all the good stuff?
I don't know.
You're the person who does this.
CaptainCo.com. That's www.CaptainCo.com. We've got shirts, tees. Those are the same thing.
Yeah. It is clearly contagious.
I feel like I'm the only one who hasn't like degenerated into like a babbling mess.
I'm sorry. We have t-shirts. We have sweatshirts. We've got hats. We've got toys. Awesome collectibles. We have a bunch of back issues, some reprints, some original issues from the 50s, 60s run. So head over and check them all out.
All right, cool. So CaptainCo.com for merchandise and magazines and subscriptions. FamousMonsters.com for more of the same. You can also find us on every single manner of social media, like
Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Most are Famous Monsters, FMOF, FMOFL. Find us.
Find us, or
Tumblr,
we'll find you.
YouTube, yes. Pinterest.
And while you're
Instagram.
At it, follow American Gothic as well, because we are trying to keep the legacy of Famous Monsters in original comics as well. Yeah.
That's right. And so if you are enjoying this podcast, at least, or if you made it to this point of the podcast and you're still hanging on,
I think you deserve a round of
applause.
Yeah, a round
of applause for you. We want to say thank you very much for listening. We want you to spread the word. We also want you, if you can, if you're with iTunes, you can. We'd really appreciate you giving us a 5-star rating and maybe an explanation as to why you like our podcast, just so we can spread the word.
Didn't you say in like a previous episode you'd buy him a cheeseburger too if you left him a review?
Are you holding me to that?
I think I am. I'm hungry for a cheeseburger.
I mean, yeah,
David.
You get a date with.
I will buy you a cheeseburger.
Well,
cheeseburger there is that date. Girl. There is that girl in Canada, but I'll have to let her know. So if you enjoyed this podcast and you enjoy Famous Monsters Magazine and our comics at American Gothic Press, please spread the word. Make sure to incorporate horror, sci-fi, fantasy, and genre pop culture into your conversations to ensure generations of monster kids to come. So until next time, the truth is out there.
I want to believe it is.
I want to believe.
Fight the future, man. Fight the future.
The Famous Monsters podcast is copyright Famous Monsters and Movieland Classics, LLC. All rights reserved.
Take a little walk to the edge of town and go across the track where the viaduct looms like a bird of doom as it ships and cracks. Where secrets lie in the border fires and the humming wires. Yeah, man, you know you're never coming back. Across the square, across the bridge, past the mills, past the stacks. On a gathering storm comes a tall, handsome man in a dusty black coat with a red right hand.
The Famous Monsters podcast has been brought to you by the Silver Screen Film and Comic Festival, happening March 4th, 5th, and 6th at the Roxy 14 Theater in Santa Rosa, California, with special guests John Landis, Rick Baker, Robert Englund, Heather Langenkamp, and many more. For tickets and information, visit silverscreenfest.com.